Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We're not going to ask for calls just yet, perhaps towards the end of the program. But right now, I want to introduce our special guest for this evening. His name is Mr. Adam Pennenberg. He's written a fascinating book called Tragic Indifference. And it's the story of the automotive industry and their indifference towards the terrible damage that was done to many, many people because they purchased American cars really thinking that they were purchasing cars that were quality and had been engineered properly. And it goes into the background, for instance, of the Bronco 2 SUV. One in 500 of those turned over and at least one person was killed in them, and yet nothing was done about it. In fact, then they came out, Ford came out with the Explorer, and about one in every 2,700 of those cars turned over, and of course somebody died in the process. And of course there'd be so many other accidents where nobody died, and Ford blamed Firestone, who put the tires on, and Firestone blamed Ford for building the vehicle with too high a center of gravity. And so I can let Mr. Pennenberg tell you about this, because he's done a wonderful job of telling you the story of a lawyer. It's the story of a lawyer who took on the automotive industry and has won over $1 billion in settlements from the automotive industry just for one of the one of these vehicles. I think that Ford has paid out over $1 billion because this man had the tenacity to get onto this case and to try to get something for the people who were being damaged because the company didn't care. They knew it was a faulty design, and they covered that up, and they did everything they could to prevent the public from learning. And what was even more really disheartening is they were quite willing to settle some of the claims rather than do what was right and re-engineer the car. Mr. Pennenberg, thank you so much for being with us one last time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been on all of our other audiences, but this is a completely different audience. This is an audience on the four stations up in the Great Northwest, towards our station here in the Central Coast of California, and then we will be going nationwide on our internet connection. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, about what motivated you to write the book, and this incredible story of tragic indifference on the part of the automotive company, because all they would have to do would be to pay a little money out rather than re-engineer what they knew was an unsafe vehicle.
Yeah, well, my name's Adam Pennenberg, and the book that we're talking about is Tragic Indifference, One Man's Battle with the Auto Industry Over the Dangers of SUVs, and it's my latest book. I'm an investigative journalist. I've written for the New York Times and Wired, Forbes, a whole host of magazines, and you know, mostly my beat was technology and hackers and cybercrime and things of that nature. But and my first book was on corporate espionage. And, you know, so I learned a little bit about how corporations act when people aren't looking. And this book it came to me when I was reading press coverage of the whole Ford and Firestone tire disaster in the year 2000. I'm sure everyone's kind of familiar with what happened. And, you know, when I read a lot of the press coverage, and although a lot of the reporting was really excellent, I still couldn't really figure out what had happened. I mean, I'd read all these press accounts of, you know, Firestone having built defective tires, and I read a lot of other press accounts of Ford having engineered a dangerous vehicle in the Ford Explorer, and I knew that both companies were blaming one another. Firestone was saying that the Ford Explorer was defective, and the reason that there were all these problems were that, you know, they were at fault, and Ford was saying Firestone was at fault, so I decided to research it myself, and two and a half years later, here I am.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and I can remember at the time thinking, oh, these people are just there just looking for somebody to sue. But as the story unfolds, you realize that these people were victims of a problem that Ford knew was endemic within the car. They knew it was faulty. They were told repeatedly by their engineers it was faulty. And they just didn't want to put out the money to re-engineer the frame, because they were using the frame, what was it, for a Ford Ranger three-quarter truck or half-ton truck, and which boosted the center of gravity up so high that, you know, in their trials, why, they would tip over, or at least a couple of wheels would come off the ground if they made a sharp turn.
Exactly. I mean, what Ford did was they took an existing structure of the pickup truck, Ford Ranger, and they slapped a cabin on top. And, you know, they thought that this would make a vehicle they could sell to the public. And they've sold a lot of these vehicles. The Ford Explorer has been, as Ford loves to point out, has been the most popular SUV 11 years running or something like that. But the problem is that when you take an existing pickup truck frame and add a cabin, you make a vehicle that's top heavy. And a pickup truck ain't an SUV. And they're actually quite different. And unfortunately, what has happened is that Ford created a vehicle in the Ford Bronco 2, and then subsequently the Ford Explorer, which is dangerously unstable, and a lot of people have died, and a lot of people have been critically injured. And instead of fixing the vehicle, Ford decided to settle these cases one at a time as they came in, and profit along the way. And sadly, hundreds, 300 people or so died alone in Ford Explorer Firestone tire problems. But, you know, the tire was only involved in about 3 out of 10 fatal rollover accidents. The Ford Explorer has one of the worst safety records of any SUV on the road. And my book, Tragic Indifference, what I tried to do was to take a look at the evidence, weigh it carefully, and then, unfortunately, I came away with the conclusion that Ford had, Ford's own engineers had warned the company and management about the dangerousness of this vehicle. And still, Ford decided to rush the car to market and sell it to families. And sadly, a lot of people have died. And, you know, I mean, if you just look at the evidence on its most basic level, I mean, you have 1 in 2,700 Ford Explorers has rolled over and killed someone. 1 in 500 Ford Bronco 2s has rolled over and killed someone in the car. If you had 1 in 500 TV sets blow up when you plugged them in, you know the government would step in and do something. If you had 1 in 500 cans of Coca-Cola were poisoned, you know that the government would step in and do something. But for some reason, Ford Motor Company has gotten away literally with murder.
And it really is murder in many instances. Not only murder, but people ending up quadriplegic or permanently damaged because of this. And, of course, Ford was willing to put out all sorts of money for lawyers, and they were willing to put people on the stand who would frankly lie. There's a wonderful story that you tell about for the former chief engineer for a Ford Motor Company who really had a number of disagreements with them about the safety of this vehicle. He eventually left their employment, and then he testified for the other side, and then, in other words, testified against Ford, and then they came and they made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. You want to talk about that?
Yes, we're talking about a man named David Bickerstaff, who was a Ford engineer who helped design the initial Ford Bronco 2. And, David Bickerstaff had warned the company management over and over about the instability of the Ford Bronco 2. I mean, he pointed out, rightly so, that the vehicle was too high, it wasn't wide enough, it wasn't long enough, and that the suspension system was completely wrong for this kind of car. And he recommended several changes, including making the car wider, lowering it, changing the suspension system. Unfortunately, management decided to ignore these requests from their engineers, and instead decided to market the car anyway, hoping that, well, they could settle these suits one at a time as they came in. David Bickerstaff left the company after the Ford Bronco 2 was introduced, and he became a gold mine for plaintiff's attorneys who were suing Ford, until the day that he was invited to a hotel room by Ford lawyers and, given $4,000 a day, or promised $4,000 a day, to testify on Ford's behalf. He was doing that, and he was a very difficult witness because, he was very knowledgeable about Ford and the technology and the design of the Ford Bronco 2. And so he was kind of a nightmare in court until one day the lawyer who I write about in the book, Tab Turner, got to cross-examine him on the stand in the case Kamek versus Ford Motor Company. And this is a very sad case in which a young college student was in a Ford Bronco 2 that rolled over after a tread separation, and the poor woman was thrown from the car and literally drowned in her own blood. She suffered intensive internal injuries from the accident, and her family subsequently sued Ford. At the trial in 1995 in Texas, this man, David Bickerstaff, took the stand, and Tab Turner carved him up like a turkey because, unbeknownst to Mr. Bickerstaff, Tab Turner received a letter in the mail anonymously in which David Bickerstaff had written Ford's attorneys promising to testify, quote-unquote, in Ford's favor in all these trials.
For $4,000 a day, or?
For $4,000 per diem. And, and so Tab Turner asked him, did you sell your testimony to Ford Motor Company for $4,000 a day? And David Bickerstaff denied this. And so Turner said, well, let's look at the letter. And he had blown up the letter to the size of a door, placed it on his large easel and had a curtain over it. And he pulled the curtain off, and Bickerstaff, of course, turned white when he saw the letter. And Turner had him not only read the contents of the letter to the jury, but also had him underline the term in Ford's favor a number of times in court to make his point. And subsequent to that, Mr. Bickerstaff was a most cooperative witness for the plaintiff's attorney.
Yes, he had perjured himself. And the trouble is that Ford would use the perjured testimony that they knew was perjured testimony, that they were paying for, that would be dishonest. And then, of course, if they lost the case, then they would appeal it. And they would appeal it, and they would appeal it. So the people would, because they're willing to go on forever, and these people, lots of them have medical bills or personal problems, and are they quadriplegic, they've got to have care. And they would do everything they possibly could to avoid paying. And that's how the game is played. You see, they really aren't concerned about doing what was right. They have a big legal staff. What can the average individual get? I mean, they've got 40 or 50 lawyers, and the average individual would have one lawyer, maybe a couple. The attorney would actually turn this over to Tab Turner, and, maybe there'd be a couple on there. But they did not have the staff to counter this, except they didn't anticipate Mr. Turner's tenacity or the fact that he was going to be able to put together a staff of his own and take on multiple of these cases and defeat them time after time after time. So why don't you tell a little bit more about the story?
Well, yeah, actually what was amazing to me was David Bickerstaff's career as an expert witness came to a crashing close because in March 2001, realize that's, literally 7 years later, U.S. District Judge John Koppenhaber found by a preponderance of the evidence that a conspiracy existed between Ford and its officers and David Bickerstaff from July 1990 until 1996. I mean, this shows that there was a conspiracy between Ford and this witness, and the man perjured himself on the stand, and, this was to the detriment of people who had been suing Ford. Now, listen, in America, nobody likes lawyers. I mean, nobody likes lawyers, nobody likes journalists. Not a lot of people like radio talk show hosts. I mean, we're not very popular. We paint with this such a broad brush in our society, but the fact is there are good lawyers, and there are good journalists, and there are good talk radio hosts. And, in America, people always claim, oh, tort reform, oh, we've gone lawsuit crazy, and they always cite these cases in which, runaway juries have granted, these huge verdicts. But, what's really amazing is they never talk about when the corporations win these battles. And they never talk about the fact that, a lot of these cases are just. And if you were in a Ford Explorer and knew what I knew about them, which is that they are dangerously unstable, that Ford's own engineers warned them about this, and that they did nothing to prevent this, and you were in a rollover accident, and you were rendered a quadriplegic, what would you do? I mean, I don't know about you, but I would sue. And I think that anyone you know who was in that situation would sue as well, because it's the only way to get justice in our society, as sad as it is. And in fact, it's the trial lawyers, as much as we hate them, they are the ones who are regulating the automobile industry right now, because the government is not doing it.
And I think that the reason they're not doing it is pretty obvious from the book. The people on the National Traffic Safety Board, they are good boys. They don't make any fuss. When they retire, they get a nice job with a company that's subsidized by the automobile industry or go to work for the automobile industry as a consultant. And this is how our system works, whether it's the FDA, whether it's the one or another government agency. If you are there and you do the right sort of thing, when you retire, you're going to get a nice job with the people you've been regulating, and that just isn't right. I mean, these should never be allowed to go to work for the people that they've been regulating. We saw this recently with Boeing, where there was a woman who was representing the Air Force and your pocketbook and my pocketbook, who was negotiating with Boeing for the leasing to the Air Force of some 80 jets that were going to be used as jet tankers. And, of course, what they... average individual didn't know is the arrangement was already made that as soon as the negotiations were completed, this woman went to work for Boeing after selling out us to the tune of, I don't know, $8, $10 billion. Apparently there were some people on the Boeing board who felt that was wrong, and they ended up firing not only her, but firing their own CEO.
I think, and the CFO as well.
I think they should have gone to jail myself. But, of course, you don't find the CEOs very often going to jail. Maybe we see a few of the minor ones, but it'll be a long time before you see Kenneth Lay or the CEO of Boeing going to prison. Kenneth Lay, of course, was the CEO of Enron, a large contributor to the current administration, but he contributed to both sides, and Ray Davis and everybody else and that you can imagine. And this is really what's wrong when you have people who are lying and encourage perjury and misuse the system, and they get off scot-free. Well, you know, I think one of the most interesting things about, I think it was the Explorer, you correct me if I'm wrong, but they actually did this. They had a crane pick out this SUV and turn it upside down and then gently lower it onto the ground. Now, there is no reinforcement for the roof. So you just lower this onto the ground without any trauma or, being thrown, and the roof collapses.
It will collapse under its own weight. That's precisely correct. And you know what's even worse about that is that Ford does meet federal roof crush standards, because the roof crush standards are 30 years old, and they don't take into account that you're not just taking a little tiny economy car. You're taking a, 2-ton sports utility vehicle. And, it doesn't take into account the fact that you have 2 tons coming down on the roof. And so, yes, if you take a Ford Explorer, flip it upside down, lower it on its roof, it will collapse under its own weight. And, at the same time, you have a warning sticker on the driver's side visor of every SUV in America, mandated by the federal government, because they love warnings, but they don't actually do anything. And it'll say that this vehicle has an elevated risk of rollover. Don't make any sudden turns. So Ford and SUV makers like them are aware that these vehicles have an elevated risk of rollover, and if they do know this, and they're marketing these vehicles to families, and they are, how come they don't reinforce the roof?
And this is what's so unconscionable, but I hate to say this, but when you have a society where you have no moral foundation, where there is no right, there is no wrong, where the profit margin is what's important rather than providing a good vehicle, why should we be surprised at what's happening? And, of course, if you'll see what's happening to Ford, they're losing money year after year after year. And I hate to say it, but they deserve to, because they've been putting unsafe vehicles, vehicles that they knew were unsafe, on the road. And people have been dying. One in every 500 Bronco 2s turned over and somebody died in it. How many other turned over and people were crippled or injured for life? We don't know. And one in every 2,700 Ford Explorers that turned over and somebody was killed. How many others where people were quadriplegic or injured for life? And there's a lot of those Ford Explorers still out there on the road just waiting to go over, aren't there?
Yes, there are. There are about 3 million Ford Explorers built the old way, with a too high center of gravity and that are too narrow, and that have been shown, by statistics to be an unreasonable danger. Fortunately, Ford finally, in the year for the 2002 model, did make a safer SUV. They finally listened to their engineers, and they incorporated some design changes as to widen the vehicle and to put in a rear independent suspension system. But you know what? It's a little late, and you still have 3 million of the old vehicles on the road, and all of them are a rollover risk, and people should know that.
Well, there's so much more to the story, and this is all laid out in this book, Tragic Indifference, and I recommend it. It's a good read, and if you're having a little trouble with hypotension, your blood pressure is a little low, you read this book, and it'll get your blood pressure up where it really belongs. In fact, it may even get, if you've got high blood pressure, don't read the book, though, because it is infuriating to realize we have corporate executives who have crass indifference to public safety, and, of course, they get big bonuses, and they're never punished for their crimes. We'll be right back here in a few moments with our special guest, Adam Pennenberg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we're just going to talk a little bit about the incidents where people would simply start up their car, or the car would be in neutral, and suddenly it would just shoot ahead at 60 miles an hour. And, of course, people would report this. Sometimes there were serious injuries. Sometimes people were badly hurt. Sometimes it would just happen, but these people would report to Ford, my car just suddenly started up and just, you know, and it was going 60 miles an hour, and I, you know, the other way to stop it would be to turn off the ignition. Most people don't think of that. The pounding on the brake, it doesn't do any good. Why don't you tell that incredible story and how the Ford company was saying, oh, no, you pressed on the wrong pedal. That's what happened.
Well, the problem was with the cruise control, and Ford has had numerous recalls over their cruise control, and the problem was that what would happen would be that somehow the car would all of a sudden, while you're in idling in neutral, would shoot into cruise control, and you'd start go from 0 to 60 in no time, and you wouldn't be able to hit the brakes. And, of course, this is quite surprising to the driver of the car. And, you know, different things would set it off. Sometimes it was a computer chip problem. Other times, even radio waves. If someone's driving by, you know, somewhere where there are radio waves, all of a sudden the car would shoot into cruise control. And, you know, again, Ford had numerous recalls over this. And, you know, Ford always claimed that, oh, you know, that's ridiculous. How could a car, you know, all of a sudden shoot into 60 miles an hour? I mean, like there's a ghost inside. I mean, from Ford's perspective, this was a ridiculous thing, and yet there were people who wrote complaints to the company over and over again. They had received hundreds of complaints like this over a variety of their different cars, over different models and types. And, again, this is another example of Ford just covering up a fact that they had a problem, a quality control problem with their vehicles. And, you know, as far-fetched as it sounds, you know, again, you know, you sometimes hear these stories in which, you know, somebody's driving down the road and they claim they couldn't hit the brake. And then, you know, people think, oh, you know, some old person, you know, couldn't, you know, confuse the brake with the accelerator. But how many of you have ever done that? I mean, how many people actually confuse the brake with the accelerator? I would imagine it's a very small number of people, if ever. And, you know, the real problem is that, the craftsmanship of these Ford vehicles, which, you know, J.D. Power found, Ford to be, you know, worst in initial quality. And there's a reason for that, because, you know, Ford will release cars to the public that are dangerously unsafe. It's not just the Ford Explorer and the Ford Bronco, but think about it. They had the Ford Pinto back in the 70s, and that was so bad that Saturday Night Live once came up with a skit involving a Pinto lighter. I mean, you have the Crown Victoria police cars, which, you know, 13 policemen across the country have been killed when their vehicles have been struck from behind at highway speed because Ford placed the gas tank outside the internal frame, and the net result has been fireballs in which, as I said, 13 officers have been killed. And the state of Arizona is up in arms over this. So you see, this is a problem across Ford's vehicles, and, you know, it's tragic.
And the thing is, this is what happened with the Pinto. They knew that the Pinto was basically an inferno waiting to happen. And they even had directives. They even had administrative letters going back and forth saying, well, it'll be cheaper just to pay off a few of the claims rather than change the design. Now, imagine that. Oh, yeah, there are going to be some people incinerated in our car, but we're not going to correct it. We'll just pay the claims. It'll be cheaper to pay the claims than to redesign the car. And we're going to cover that here in just a moment when we get back, because that was the smoking gun that... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Adam Pennenberg. We're talking about his book, Tragic Indifference, and it's an excellent read. We recommend it to you. And we were just talking about the Ford Pinto. Now, this is not a book about the Ford Pinto. Certainly, this shows the attitude of the Ford Motor Company, because there actually were directives that somebody got hold of in the company where they said it'll be cheaper to pay off the legal claims for the people who were incinerated rather than go ahead and change the design. What was that about?
Well, you know, this was uncovered by an investigative journalist named Mark Dowie, who wrote a piece for Mother Jones magazine that took a real hard look at the Ford Pinto. This is back in the late 70s, which feels like a million years ago. But unfortunately, when you deal with Ford and have read as many internal documents as I have and have interviewed as many people as I have, what's really kind of strange is this incredible sense of deja vu you get when you're dealing with Ford, whether it's the Ford Pinto or the Ford Crown Victoria police car or the Ford Explorer or Ford Bronco II. You find that the company is aware of problems with their vehicles, but in a rush to get them to market and to make money, they will try to paper over these problems instead of fixing them, and the net result is a lot of death and despair and crippled people. And with the Ford Pinto, what occurred was that Ford did a cost-benefit analysis where it weighed the cost of fixing the Ford Pinto, which would have cost something like, I forget, a couple dollars per vehicle to protect the gas tank in the event of an accident, as opposed to paying off settlement claims and calculating the cost of human life. And so Ford decided that it was cheaper to pay off settlement claims and to pay off death and accident claims than it would be to actually pay the few dollars per vehicle to fix each one on the road. And so that's what it decided to do until they were forced to recall the vehicle in 1978.
And eventually, of course, the government forced them to do something. But in the meantime, do we have any idea how many people died because of the Ford's crass indifference to... And this was a corporate decision. This was not something that just happened by accident. They knew exactly what they were doing, but they didn't have to be worried because you can't sue a corporation for murder.
No, you can't, because who do you hold responsible? I mean, these guys are not going to serve jail time, even though I wish they would. The only thing you can do is sue them for damages in civil cases. I mean, that's really the only thing you can do.
All right. Well, if we have any people out there in the listening audience who'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And this is the most incredible story of one man's effort to, and this would be Tab Turner, the lawyer who took on these cases. And he was a small town lawyer, came from Little Rock, Arkansas, and eventually, because he was a smart individual, he was able to take on a number of cases. He even has his own jet he flies around in, and yet he drives a pretty ramshackle car, and he's not in this for the money at all. But there is not a lawyer who will hold these people responsible. You can be sure your government officials aren't going to hold them responsible unless things are just so blatant that, you know, and there's so much publicity that they're forced to, because, after all, if the officials take a strong stand against the companies, they're not going to get a good job afterwards. And it really, this is the thing that really bothers me. It's not just in the automotive industry. It's in every aspect of government regulation. People have to be held responsible. Corporations have to be held responsible. There has to be a moral foundation to society. And when the moral foundation is gone, then soon society is gone. Well, now, of course, as you write this book and you tell people this story, what sort of response do you get?
It's really amazing. When I address audiences over this book, invariably someone will come up to me afterward. Actually, a few people will come up to me afterward and tell me, you know, I was in a Ford Explorer rollover accident, or I was in a Ford Bronco II rollover, or my sister was, my cousin was, my friend was. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, only it occurs with the Ford Explorer and the Ford Bronco II. What is really amazing to me is just how many rollover accidents have occurred. And it's not just Ford, okay? I mean, the Chevy Blazer has a pretty poor rollover record as well. The Isuzu Trooper, Toyota 4Runner. I mean, a bunch of them have pretty poor safety records, but some of them have actually pretty good safety records. So it's not that SUVs are inherently dangerous. I mean, you can make the argument they're inherently fuel burners and they pollute, but you can't make the argument that they're inherently unsafe. What you can make the argument is that certain vehicles on the road are unsafe, and the Ford Explorer and the Ford Bronco 2 are two of the biggest offenders.
And, of course, this was because the center of gravity was too high. They knew it was too high. All of their studies showed that it was too high, even when they were driving these on the test ranges, why they would almost turn over, and they would actually watch, and a couple of them would make a sharp turn, a couple of wheels would come up off the air. So when we get back, we'll talk about how they tried to solve that problem by putting inferior tires on the car. And, of course, that'll get us into this story about Firestone. So we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will agree that we have an unusual message, that we perhaps see things through slightly different eyes than other people do, and that the message we're getting out across America 5 hours a day on radio, shortwave, internet, satellite, and through our various publications, this message is something that the American people must understand. And our recurrent theme is that we are fighting really a spiritual battle when, of course, righteousness is gone from a nation. Then that nation will no longer be blessed. So if you believe that there is a problem out there and you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family, why, it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we encourage all of our listeners to go to our website, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the American Freedom Network, on the Genesis Network. You can listen, of course, to archive programs. You can listen to the Radio Liberty Network. And, of course, many people are listening this evening here on the American Christian Network. But we have an opportunity through various small networks across America to reach an increasing number of people with information they're not going to get from regular channels. So it's so vitally important. Without a free exchange of knowledge, we cannot possibly hope to maintain a free society. And, of course, the news media is often referred to as the fourth estate. Well, I think in many respects the fourth estate, even with due respect to our listener, to our guest this evening, Mr. Penenberg, who actually written for some of the companies, but in certain instances the fourth estate has become a fifth column. And if you've read the book Into the Buzzsaw, it's the story of 18 people in the media. What Pulitzer Prize-winning writer, Emmy Prize-winning television producers who tried to tell a story that the establishment didn't want, and all of them became persona non grata. Their careers were ruined, and they were simply drummed out of the corps because, of course, they didn't go along with the system. They thought that the American people were entitled to the truth. Now, you can get some stories out, and I'm so glad that this story got out and has not been spiked, and I think it's important that people understand the skullduggery that behind what we're talking about today. But there are lots of other stories we're not getting. Well, you'll get it from Radio Liberty, and with your help, we'll continue broadcasting. If you'd like to become part, not of the problem, but part of the solution, give serious consideration to calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and joining the Radio Liberty family. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Adam Penenberg. His book is Tragic Indifference, and it's the story, really, of the what's happened with the SUVs. And then I thought maybe we could talk next about the Firestone tires, because it wasn't simply the SUVs. It was they were bad, and the Firestone tires were even worse. But Firestone had a very close relationship with Ford. Henry Ford and Mr. Firestone had been friends, at the beginning of the last century. And so Ford had always used Firestone's tires. And then even when the Firestone company was sold to a a Japanese firm why they Ford continued using Firestone tires. But there were several things that were suggested that they might be able to do to lower the center of gravity on the car so that they wouldn't tend to tip so much when, of course, they were making sharp turns. And would you like to talk about the various things about making smaller tires or inferior tires or underinflating the tires? All of this in an effort to avoid having to do what they should have done to begin with, and that was redesign the vehicle. So tell about, you know, how, in many respects, Firestone, desperate to keep their contract with Ford, compromised even the most logical things to do.
Yes, well, Firestone is clearly an accomplice in this horror. You know, the tires are just one component in a car that has many components. And, you know, Ford was alarmed early on with the stability of the Ford Explorer. And they were also concerned about gas mileage because the car was getting really bad gas mileage, about 12 miles per gallon. And so Ford decided there were only a few things it could do. You know, it wasn't going to lower the center of gravity because that was going to cost too much money. It wasn't going to widen the vehicle because that was going to cost too much money. It wasn't going to put in a new suspension system because that was going to cost too much money. So what did Ford do? They decided, hey, let's let air out of the tires and let's make lighter tires. Because, you know, if we make lighter tires, then, you know, we'll get better gas mileage, which is true. I mean, you know, you make a tire lighter, you know, obviously rolling parts, you know, that are lighter have a greater effect than, like, just, let's say, taking steel out of the roof, which is what Ford also did to make the vehicle lighter, but that's another story. And so it instructed Firestone to make a passenger car tire to convey this two-ton SUV. Now, not only did it ask for this, but it wanted to do it at a price point that was extremely cheap for Ford, because Ford at the time was on a real cost-cutting mission. And so it told Firestone to make this car at a really, to make this tire at a really low price point and to take a pound and a half out of each tire. And the only two ingredients in a tire are rubber and steel. And so that was the only way they could do it. And so they made a passenger car tire with the lowest possible temperature rating, a C rating, which no other SUV on the market had, by the way. And that was a pound and a half lighter. And so, and at the same time, it instructed Firestone to set the PSI, the you know, the pressure, at 26 PSI, which is pretty low. And you
now,
know,
ordinarily would be what, about 35?
Yeah, the Ford Ranger truck used the same exact tires and had tread separations at a much lower rate at 35 psi. But at 35 psi, Ford Explorers couldn't keep their wheels on the ground in tight turns, and so they let air out of the tire. But the problem is, when you have a fully loaded SUV, 2 tons plus, let's say 1,000 pounds of 5 or 6 people in there plus their gear, you know, that tire is conveying a lot of weight. And, you know, not only that, but when you have 26 PSI, you know, and it's supposed to 35, you have more friction, and friction creates heat. Heat is the enemy of rubber. And, you know, the problem is, that's why a lot of these Firestone Ford accidents occurred in hot weather states. Most of them, in fact, occurred in California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, New Mexico, even. You know, it was the hot weather states that were really affected by this. And the reason is because, well, you had a very light tire that was defective anyway, you know, transporting this two-ton vehicle. The friction was too high. And not only that, but I don't know how many of your listeners actually check their air pressure all the time. You know, pretty soon, you know, you lose a pound of pressure every month in a vehicle. And so, you know, you're looking at 25 PSI, 24 maybe, 23 even. And you're going on a trip, you know, fully loaded, and, you know, you have all this pressure, you have all this friction, and you're going to get a tread separation or some sort of tire failure. And unfortunately, you know, with a Ford Explorer, normally, you know, in a regular car, if you get a blowout or a tread separation, what do? You pull over to the side of the road, you pull out the jack, you change the tire, and you go on your merry way. Unfortunately, the Ford Explorer and the Ford Bronco 2 were so dangerously unstable that instead of being able to pull over to the side of the road, you would lose control, you would flip over, your roof would crush in, and you might die or you might be crippled.
And the tread would just come off of these tires, and this was the problem. They were underinflated. They were basically a car tire on a truck. And
exactly.
This was all done so that they could lower, they thought if they got enough air out, they would lower the center of gravity, and then they wouldn't be so unstable. And so doing anything other than what they should have done, they, of course, laid this trap for themselves, this tragedy for the people who believe those slogans that you see on television. No, quality is our job, or job one. Quality is job one. What was that slogan that they have?
Quality is job one. Is that even Ford will not allow its own crash test drivers to perform rollover tests because they're too dangerous.
So they just turn those trucks loose on the public when they wouldn't allow their own test drivers to do these things, because they didn't want to have them damaged and have to pay them off. So
exactly.
It's a total irresponsibility. This is a great thing. Somebody called in, asked about Lee Iacocca. Was he around Ford, or would he have anything to do with it at that time before he left Ford? I think
Lee Iacocca was responsible for the Ford Pinto.
He was, huh?
Yeah, that was his idea, and what he did was he rushed the car to market, and he wanted the car to be made for a special price point, I believe under $2,000 at the time. And so, that was his mandate. Like, we have to build an economy car, we have to compete with the Japanese automakers, we have to make this for a really cheap price point, and he wanted it now. And unfortunately, they didn't get all the bugs out. And, this rush to job one is the day that vehicles roll off the assembly lines, and delaying job one is very expensive for an automaker, as you can imagine, because you have to gear up all your factories, all your workers, you have to have everything set, He did not want to delay job one for the Pinto, and obviously this was the same problem with the Ford Bronco II and the Ford Explorer.
And then left them and went to work for Chrysler?
Chrysler. Yeah, he became the head of Chrysler.
Okay, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment about the things we're talking about, or if you just give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the state of California. And now, of course, you must have spent a fair amount of time talking to Mr. Turner about his objectives in bringing all of these lawsuits. What basically is his input? What does he tell you about his desire to actually use the legal profession to call the industry to task? Because the government won't do it?
Well, that's precisely what he's trying to do. I mean, he wants to make it too expensive for Ford to do business as usual. And so he tries to push Ford to make changes in their vehicles. And the only way to do it, because the government isn't going to help, is to sue them. And I know that sounds kind of specious to people. I'm sure people are thinking, oh, my God, he's just really in it to make money. And let's face it, Mr. Turner is a very wealthy man. He didn't start out wealthy, but he ended up wealthy. I mean, the guy has his own jet. But, at the same time, this is a guy who can take on battalions of Ford and Firestone attorneys all on his own with just a laptop and a cell phone and his knowledge and his jet. And he can be anywhere at any time, and sometimes he'll get to three or four different cities in a day, taking depositions, doing court appearances. He's a one-man wrecking crew. And he really believes that the only way to make automakers accountable for the vehicles they sell, because, again, the government is not doing it, is to sue them and make it so expensive that they'll have to make changes. And, it's worked in other industries as well. I mean, the reason that we have, backup alarms on trucks is because of a lawsuit. The reason that we have any kind of, control of asbestos is because of lawsuits. Look at the fast food industry. When there was an E. coli breakout at Jack in the Box restaurant, it forced the fast food makers like Jack in the Box, Hardee's, McDonald's, Burger King, to mandate that their beef suppliers clean up their act. And, meat packers are some of the worst offenders of sanitation and health in this country. And, fast food hamburgers are now safer than store-bought beef. I mean, what does that tell you? And the reason is because fast food makers do not want to get sued. It's a nightmare for them. And so Turner has taken this idea to the automobile industry, and that's what he's been doing for the last, 15 years. And, the guy has settled some $1 billion in cases against Ford alone. If Ford didn't have a problem, they wouldn't have paid out $1 billion, not a million, $1 billion in settlements over 15 years.
Well, yeah, I was a physician for many years, and tobacco smoking is a terribly hazardous thing. It not only produces CA of the lung, but emphysema of the lung, and it produces CA of the pancreas and bladder, and it's been known for many, many years that deleterious effects of smoking. So what did the government do? They insisted they put a little note on the packages saying, you know, tobacco can be hazardous to your health. And then when, of course, people tried to sue the tobacco companies, why, they would say, well, look, it's right there on the package. Sort of like that note that they have in the visor there on the SUVs. It's right there. It says you take a sharp turn. Why, this might turn over. You took a sharp turn. You should have known that. We told you there was a danger. Well, it was, I hate to say it, but it wasn't the medical profession that got this thing straightened out. It was the trial lawyers, and eventually they brought so much pressure to bear that now at least we see the advertisement saying there is no such thing as a safe cigarette, and they have really, in many respects, I think, cut back tremendously on the consumption of tobacco. People want to do dumb things they should have a right to, but they ought to at least know that it's dumb, and that wasn't the message they were getting. Well, right now, let's go to Phil, who's calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I wanted to specifically ask a question to your guest if he happens to have any knowledge of GM products. For example, the 91 Suburban, when it was more of a truck before they turned it into a smaller Suburban, if he has any knowledge of the danger in those cars.
I don't specifically on that particular model of the Suburban. I know that the other Suburbans, the more recent ones, are so big, I think you'd have trouble flipping one of those things over with a forklift, but I don't know anything about the 91 model. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, Bill. Do you have a 91 Suburban?
Yes.
All right, I can't comment on it. I've got an 87 Suburban, and it seems to be pretty stable. Of course, I'll tell you what, they've sure got good truck tires on it, and they're not those little flimsy things they were putting on the Ford SUVs.
Yeah, that's the same type of body style as basically the big truck body style, and somewhere in the 90s they changed it to a smaller vehicle.
Right.
I haven't heard, the thing is, you hear a lot about other brands of SUVs. I mean, like the Chevy Blazer has a pretty poor record, and there are other SUV makers as well. I haven't heard anything about that, and I think that's a good sign. You know, one way I would tell is that a lot, again, this is very unscientific, but when the manufacturer has the tire maker insist on a 26 PSI, and there are certain Japanese SUV makers that ask for this, that to me is a tip-off that maybe the reason they ask for 26 PSI, which is pretty low, is because they're afraid the wheels will come off in sharp turns. So it depends on your PSI.
Well, thank you. This is a very interesting show. Thank you again for answering my question.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling, Phil. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And well, do you think Mr. Turner's getting the message over? Do you think that the automotive industry is going to begin to do the right thing, facing these massive lawsuits and this one man who goes from city to city bringing lawsuits against them? Because he has enough money, he could live out the rest of his life, would never work another day. And this is exhausting, very trying, and he has to put, about $500,000 of his own money into every one of those cases before it ever gets to court?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, these cases are extremely expensive to bring against an automaker. And you can imagine that automakers hire battalions of lawyers who, basically do everything they possibly can to delay a trial and to throw everything they can at you, including the kitchen sink. But, at the same time, he's not the only one bringing these cases. I mean, there are a number of lawyers who have moved into this world of rollovers because, it's a field that's ripe. And much like the tobacco cases, it took a long time for someone to actually win one of them. And then there was kind of like the dam broke. And, all of a sudden, everyone jumped on board. And I think it's turning that way with SUV cases as well. And, I think that's also a reason why Ford finally did make a safer SUV in 2002. Unfortunately, they make the two-door the same old way, which makes it the most dangerous vehicle on the road right now. So,
all right. Well, let's go to Theodore, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Theodore. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan and your guest, and definitely an interesting show. And I say thank God for Volvos.
Yes. And you know who owns Volvo?
Pardon?
You know who owns Volvo now?
Tell
Ford.
Me. Ford. So
Ford bought Volvo. And Ford Volvo makes probably the safest SUV on the market. Actually has built-in rollover prevention computer system on board, side curtain airbags, and a roof that's so powerful that if you dropped it from 8 feet in the air, it wouldn't crush. Volvo makes an excellent SUV, and what's amazing to me is Ford bought Volvo. Ford knows what kind of technology Volvo has, and yet look at their Explorer.
Well, and there, it can go to one of, you know, it can go either two ways. One, they bought Volvo to learn how to do it right, or they bought Volvo because they're going to undermine it and they're out to kill all of us.
Well, we'll find out here before long, but do you have a Volvo?
I have a Volvo, and I also have a question. I turned in a little late, so I don't know if you made any mention of Ralph Nader's role in helping America come to terms with the fact that their automakers did not always have their best interests at heart.
We really didn't. I didn't. Did you discuss that at all any place, Ms. Pennenberg?
Not tonight, but I have in the book. I mean, there's a whole section on Ralph Nader and, you know, the formation of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which was Ralph Nader's doing, who almost single-handedly, you know, changed the way that business was done in this country. I mean, Ralph Nader was, you know, what he did with the automobile industry is really just unbelievable. And, you know, he deserves all the credit in the world for that. And, you know, he started it all with a book he wrote called Unsafe at Any Speed, which was about the Chevy Corvair, which Nader asserted was unsafe even when it was parked. So, you know, unfortunately, things haven't changed all that much since then. You know, Nader went on to different things after that, you know, and he founded Public Citizen, which is, you know, a consumer rights group in Washington, D.C. And, you know, again, I mean, I can't say enough about what Ralph Nader did in the past. You know, he really did bring attention to a huge problem with automobile safety.
Well, aren't they, he kind of spun off these various organizations that, as my understanding, were of lawyers who still are engaged in various aspects of consumer strengthening consumer law.
He founded the Center for Automobile Safety in D.C. He founded Public Citizen, and, you know, he ran for president.
Right. Well, I just wanted to give him some kudos because once you get into politics, everybody's, you know, on your case. But, you know, he truly is one of the heroes in terms of the one thing we all have in common in America is we're consumers.
Yeah.
And he really kicked off the consumer rights movement and made us aware that we had to pay attention.
Okay. Actually, I report a funny story in my book, Tragic Indifference, about Ralph Nader, because GM actually hired a detective to follow him, and GM got caught doing that. And GM actually even tried dirty tricks, like asserting that Ralph Nader was a homosexual, and they actually even hired a prostitute to try to seduce him. Okay. He wasn't homosexual. They hired a prostitute in the hopes that they could seduce him and gain some dirt on him. And they were found out and had to pay a settlement to Nader for, you know, these actions. And that's what he used to actually fund Public Citizen.
So basically GM funded their own destruction, or at least their own opposition. Anyway, anything
else? Well, one comment on that. Their basic mistake was not by not hiring a smart prostitute.
Right.
He would have engaged him in good conversation, and who knows how history would have been changed.
I guess.
But
right.
I'm glad it went the way it did, because I really respect Mr. Nader, and by default, you as well, for continuing this battle to help educate us that we have to pay attention.
Thank you.
I hope you'll take a look at Tragic Indifference, because I'm not touting it to make money on selling the book. I really believe that it's the only comprehensive look at the automobile industry and the Ford Firestone battle, and it will really take you inside of how these decisions are made that cost people their lives. And I'm sad to say that not a lot of people have been looking at the automobile industry, and they really should.
And well, I think that the Consumer Report kept telling people these are unsafe vehicles. Nobody ever looked at the Consumer Report. That's one of the problems.
Exactly.
And may I leave with a request for Volvo, prayer for Volvo?
All right.
That they will not be, that they will continue to provide us with good cars.
Okay, thank you so
and
much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Adam Pennenberg, his book, Tragic Indifference. And it is a comprehensive look at the automotive industry and the fact that we have corporate executives who will actually sit around figuring how much it will cost to pay for a certain number of deaths rather than redesign the Ford Pinto or this other, is it Crown Victoria? Are they going to do anything about that, or are they just going to let them continue killing off our police officers?
Well, what's really amazing about that is that Ford finally, after a lot of pressure from different state governments, decided to retrofit a protection, a kind of a plastic bladder or a rubber bladder around the gas tank in the hopes that this would solve the problem. And in Ford's own tests, it failed. And so Ford had to go back to the drawing board, and I don't know what the status is right now, but Ford has been basically denying that there's a problem with the Crown Victoria, that everything is fine with it, and that it's in people's imaginations that it's killing people. Meanwhile, 13 police officers have been killed in this country so far, and one taxi driver in New York City, because in New York City they use Crown Victorias as well.
Now, I think people have to know that this is a standard car that's used for police officers, the Crown Victoria. And that's why this is really such a tragedy, because the police officers parking by the roadside get hit from behind, and that's it. Well, we've got Dave calling. Hi, Dave. Where are you calling from?
Spokane, Washington.
Go ahead, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I was just going to make a comment. You guys were talking about the safety in the different vehicles, Fords, and the different things. I don't know whether you guys are aware of it or not, but I think one of the stupidest things that they did with all vehicles now, they have an electric fuel pump on them that is in the gas tank. All cars have them that way now.
I don't know. Do you know anything at all about that?
And what's the problem with that?
Pardon me?
What's the problem with that?
Well, okay, if you run clear out of gas, the fuel pump continues to pump, and it'll set it on fire, and stop and think. You've got electricity in the gasoline. Mm-hmm. If you get a short in there, you're driving a bomb.
Wow, have there been cases like that? I have not heard that.
Pardon me?
Have there been incidents?
There have been incidents with explosions.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many explosions they've had or haven't had, but I know that Ford that they were talking about, that Pinto and so on, that exploded, you know, that was because the gas tank was located in a certain area outside
the frame, right? Well, anyway, right. If you hear of any of those, why, please let us know, Dave. I haven't heard about you know, that specific problem. We got a lot of other problems that are very real, and so if you have anything on that, you let me know, okay?
Okay, yeah, but like I say, I'm not, you know, I haven't heard anything on it, but I just think that, I'm surprised that the transportation safety people allowed it to happen to start with.
I'm not at all. I think that they may be part of the problem. But thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Rod calling from Spokane. Rod, we're almost out of time. Question or comment?
Yes, Dan, real quick. I'll make this real quick for you. I want to hear parts of the show, but I want to introduce something that nobody ever talks about, and I'm sure it's a major factor in these Explorer rollovers. Take a listen to the individuals who are in the hospital. They were not killed. They blew a tire at 60, 70 miles an hour, and they got them down to 45, 50, maybe 30 miles an hour, and they said all of a sudden the car just flipped on them. And I believe there's also a factor in here with the anti-lock brake system.
All right. Well, we'll get to ask our expert here. Thanks so much for calling. We're out of time. Do you know anything at all about the anti-lock brake system at all?
Well, I don't know if it's a braking system per se. I mean, obviously, when people get into a situation where there's a tread separation at 70 miles an hour and they have never experienced that before and they're not expecting it, there's a tendency to hit the brake. And when you hit the brake and the wheels lock up, you're going to have a problem at that speed. But even if you don't hit the brake, I have a whole chapter about a crash test driver who's a professional who was expecting the tire to give because they had prepared the tire that way. And he couldn't control the vehicle. After tread separation. I mean, and it was so bad that they had outriggers on the vehicle to keep it upright, and they also had a roll bar on the roof to reinforce it just in case, and he actually broke the outriggers in the rollover, and it came crashing down, and he almost died. And he didn't hit the brake at all. I mean, he believed that it's because there's an inherent instability in the Ford Explorer, and that's what caused these problems.
Well, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I just want to let people know that there's definitely a book out there that if they're interested, they can check out Tragic Indifference. And if they want to send me an email or ask me a question, I'm completely amenable to that, and they can reach me through my website, which is penenberg.com. That's P-E-N-E-N-B-E-R-G, penenberg.com. Check out the site, send me an email, tell me what you think. Tell me what you think of the book, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's a great book, but thank you so very much. Really appreciate you being with us for these three programs, and I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed it and hope that many of them will want to get copies of the book. God bless, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, well, that's, our guest has been Adam Pennenberg. I hope you enjoyed it. The book, again, Tragic Indifference. And this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that this is Radio Liberty, and we look forward to hearing from you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. And one reason we have these problems, we have corporate executives who have no sense of right and wrong. The only thing they're interested in is the bottom line. But what about the lives that are going to be lost? And when we have tragic indifference to the loss of human lives, and nobody's ever responsible, at least in this world, why, we're going to continue having this problem, although each one of us is going to have to stand one day before a bar of judgment. So until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners of management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, of course, hold your calls. We're going to, first of all, have Randy Thomason with us, bring us up to date with what's happening up in Sacramento. Then we'll have Brad Dacus. And then we'll have Bob Ford, who's up in the Squim area of the Olympic Peninsula. And he'll be talking about what's going on up there, where there's, of course, a battle for property rights and all sorts of things that are being done to take away the rights of people's property. Oh, there's a water shortage. Oh, my goodness, the water shortage is terrible. And the water shortage is interfering with the fish, and it's because of the fish we've got to take away property rights. And, of course, they have people up there who are actually going out from the Department of Fish and Game and clubbing the fish over the head and killing them so there'll be a shortage of fish, because it's not the solution. They want the problem to justify controlling it. And this is going on all across America. But we have our friends up there in the Olympic Peninsula, and we'll be talking to Bob Ford. He'll bring us up to date. But right now, on the line, coming in from the Sacramento area, is Randy Thomason. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. I'm on my cell phone. Can you hear me?
Sure, you're doing fine. So tell us what's going on up there in that den of iniquity, or should I call it the state capitol?
Well, actually, it's both. You know, I've sometimes said to people who are asking me about running the office, I said, well, you know, if you're a man, you better have a stern constitution. You better have your head in the right direction and know where you are and know who you are, because it's like going to work where there's 100 naked ladies in front of you every day. And they laugh about that. Then what do you mean? Well, there's all these lobbyists dangling money at you, and there's all these advisors, even within your own party, saying, well, you do what's best for you, not what's best for someone else. And it's very tempting, shall we say, to give in and fly. Now, there are lots of principled people, and I'm not saying most of them are principled, but there are many principled ones, and we do commend them, but it's, you've got to have a stern constitution, you've got to know who you belong to, and that's why our spiritual founding fathers even gave their lives for the cause that they believed in, because they knew they belonged to Jesus.
Well, now, what's happening up there in Sacramento? My understanding now is that the governor has got the legislature to agree to put this bond request on the ballot for next year, so we can borrow $15 billion to pay off children and grandchildren will pay it. Well, I think it's only 15 years. I suppose maybe our children will pay that. But, you know, so they can continue their spending as much as they have in the past. They're just going to borrow $15 billion so there won't be a shortfall next year. But what happens the year after that if the income is not up? Then what do you do? When do you start cutting spending?
Yeah, it's really a mess. Let me answer it this way. There are four ballot initiatives that are going to be on the March 2nd ballot here in California. And really, that is less than 3 months away. And it's going to be a $12 billion school construction bond, which is totally ignoring the waste within the system. You can build schools, you can do a lot of things using existing money, but there's waste, so they want to soak up the taxpayers even more. Then there's getting rid of the two-thirds majority for passing budgets at the state capitol. That's a bad idea because we need a two-thirds majority. We need a high threshold before taxes can be raised or budgets can be passed. Then we have the $15 billion bond that Schwarzenegger and the Democrats essentially put on the ballot, because it was all the Democrats and some of the Republicans that passed it, more of a liberal idea than a conservative one. And then there's the last one is going to be, they call it a spending limit plan, but it's not. It's massaging the existing stuff. It's mostly not much change. And so there's going to be four ballot measures, and currently, I'm going to take a closer look at them, but I don't plan to vote for any of them.
Well, you know, the thing is that the bonds have to be paid off, and not only do they have to be paid off, but they're talking about the $15 billion bond we're going to have. It's going to cost another $8 billion just to pay interest on the bond. So it's going to cost almost half again the cost of the bond just to pay the interest on it. Nobody seems to worry about paying the interest off on these bonds. We today are a state that's facing bankruptcy. The treasurer says we can't borrow any more money. And now they want $12 billion for schools, even though in our area they're talking about closing down schools because they can't afford them. And now they want to spend $12 billion to build new schools so they can close those down too.
Oh, it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, I could get kids educated better than they are currently educated, and like this, I'll hire good teachers, I'll rent out some office space with some chairs and desks for the kids, I'll buy some textbooks, and I'll give the teacher authority to instruct and discipline these children, and I'll say to the teacher, you need to raise them from this academic performance to this one in 9 months. If you get them there, you keep your job. If you don't get them there, you're fired, and if you get them beyond that, we'll give you a bonus. Pretty simple stuff, sort of like In-N-Out Burger. It's successful. It's not that difficult. We just cut out a bunch of the fat. We just cut out millions and millions of dollars of waste. And you know what? We still have money left over to have these kids a full gymnasium scholarship at the health club. I mean, you can imagine these kids working out at weights and running around the field. It's just, there's so much waste. And what we need in the state capitals, we need a governor with moral courage who would take on the fat education establishment.
Oh, well, of course, Arnold is doing the easiest thing. We'll just borrow the money to get out of the trouble we're in. That sounds like a pretty incompetent approach to the problem. I would think he would want to cut spending rather than borrow money so we continue spending as much as we ever have.
Well, yeah, because, you see, the governor does have unilateral power to get rid of a certain amount of waste. These state bureaucracies and so forth, they don't have to be around. Like the State Environmental Protection Agency is a big mammoth waste, in my opinion. It's going against people, against property owners, It's elevating animals and plants above people's needs. And there's a federal EPA, which is basically redundant with this one. So, you know, McClintock, if he had been governor, he would have gotten rid of all these things because he would got rid of overlapping bureaucracies and would have ordered a complete independent audit of every single part of government. And that's what we need. We need Schwarzenegger to call upon an independent outside firm to audit every part of government and ferret out the waste and be really hard about it. And then you won't have to do these things called taxes or bonds. You do cutting, and we go back to the budget that we had about 5 years ago before Davis took office, and we wouldn't have any budget deficit at all.
Well, you know, the tragic thing is that McClintock said, you know, that the first thing he would do, first day in office, he would demand a renegotiation of these contracts, the $20 billion in contracts for electricity that had been signed by the governor, that were negotiated by one of the governor's aides, who was being paid by the state and was also being paid by Southern California Electric. In other words, here was the fellow negotiating for us who was working for the other side. And he negotiated contracts that are going to cost us $20 billion. And McClintock said, the first day in office, I will demand those contracts be renegotiated because they were negotiated fraudulently. What's Arnold going to do about those contracts? That's $20 billion for his friends.
We've been talking about that almost every week, and I looked it up, and basically nothing has been done yet. He wants to renegotiate things where McClintock would have canceled those bad contracts outright. I don't think anybody's come to the table yet. Hopefully, some of that will happen, but hopefully it'll be within the first 100 days. Hey, I want to ask your listeners to do something. I know we got just a short time here, Dr. Stan, but I want to ask them to go to our website, savecalifornia.com. You can get the phone numbers for Governor Schwarzenegger. You can send him an email as well and ask him to give adopted children a married mom and dad. Right now, adopted children are being placed into homosexual households. That's not a healthy environment for their nurturing, for their development, for role models. And we need adopted kids to have the best society can offer, and that's a married mom and dad. You can call the governor starting tomorrow morning at 916-445-2841, 916-445-2841, and give him that message. Or you can visit SaveCalifornia.com and send him a pre-written email message. We make it very simple for you. Dr. Stan, I want to wish you a joyous Christmas. I think we should probably call it Christmas, so that people remember the real meaning of the season.
Okay, fine. Well, you too as well. I hope you have. Well, we'll be talking to you next week before Christmas, and until then, you just keep looking at what's going on up there. Go to Randy's website, savecalifornia.com. Get his information. Help him, and help him financially too. He's on the front lines of this battle. God bless you, Randy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Randy Thomason, and now we'll see if we can find Brad Dacus, and then, of course, we'll be going to our Piste de Resistance. Will be Bob Ford up there in the swim area of Washington. That's at the very tip of the Olympic Peninsula. So it's said to be a banana belt up there. There's a small area of swim where they have a very temperate climate. Don't ask me why, because there's excessive rain up there, but this one area right along the coast there, not too far from Dungeness, where the crabs come from, that just has a lovely climate. And a lot of people have gone up there to retire. Of course, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, property was much cheaper there than it is here in California. But, of course, there is a constant battle on the part of those who would use the power of government to limit property rights. And whether using eminent domain, using environmental restrictions, using the danger to the snails or the fishies or something like that, they always have a reason to take away your property rights. Well, right now with us is Brad Dacus. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Hey, doing just great, Dr. Stanley.
Tell us what's going on in your department. Of course, Brad is in charge of the director of the Pacific Justice Institute, and he's fighting our legal battles for people who are under persecution because of their religious beliefs or institutions. Now, tell us what's happening.
Well, it goes along the whole area of property rights. We had a final victory in Pennsylvania. Although most of our cases are here on the West Coast or in California, we had a case in Pennsylvania in the Salisbury Township, small town. We told this married couple who owned a farm that they couldn't have worship concerts on their property, even though there was no noise problems, there wasn't anyone close by, or it's just some ornery city councilman decided to clamp down on them because it technically was zoned for agriculture, not for worship. And we got a court to give an injunction against the city to stop them from closing down that farm and kicking out those people. But I'm pleased to announce that we just settled the case, and so that the city agreed to never bother those people again, and to do final justice. We were very pleased about the case. It became the final conclusion, and in the end, property rights and freedom of faith won out over ornery, intolerant government officials.
Well, God bless you for everything you do, Brad. Thanks very much, and thank you so much for coming down for our seminar, and we're going to send you a list of some of the people who did respond and filled out those forms you left with us. So God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, and I really appreciate that seminar. It was a real eye-opener for me, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, that's Brad Dacus, and now let's see if we can track down Bob Ford up there on the Olympic Peninsula, up in the Squim area, and, of course, he's... Bob's wife ran for the county commissioner. I think they have three county commissioners. And the trouble is that the people on the left who want to take away your rights, they're the ones who are willing to put in the time. They're the ones who are willing to go to the meetings to run for office. And, of course, they'll get a good campaign behind them. But the campaign is really all intent upon gaining power. And then when they get the power, then they want to use that power to control you and your property and take it away, sometimes give it to their friends, as they do with eminent domain. And, you know, but how do you prosecute a government official for conflict of interest, for buying your property and then giving it to a developer who just happens to have given some money for your political campaign? And where is the government, federal government, when you need them? Of course, they're not going to be there when you really need them. Right now, we've got Bob Ford. Hi, Bob. How's everything doing up there in the Olympic Peninsula?
Greetings from the great Pacific Northwest, Doctor. Great to be on, and great to hear your voice.
Well, I understand that your wife ran for to be a councilwoman.
She did. She ran for the county commissioner. We have three commissioners in a... in a county that's about 75 miles wide and about arguably 4 miles deep.
And so you're right along the coast there, and right behind you there's that beautiful Olympic Forest.
Yes.
Forest. So, I understood she really did pretty good, didn't she?
Well, for an unknown doctor, we get out early. We had I was the sign guy. My job was to get the signs out, and we get out early and we get out strong. And we kind of took them by surprise. And for an unknown, she garnered 45% of the vote, or 9,700 votes, in a off-year election. The winning vote came to about 11,000. She lost by about 2,000 votes.
Well, you only have to change over 1,000. Is that Mrs. Ford there in the background?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Sue
Hello,
Ford.
Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Well, I hope you don't get discouraged. Look, I've run many times for public office and usually got the beat, but that's all. That's important. It's important to utilize that to educate people. In fact, in the California Medical Association, after 10 years, I finally got whole California Medical Association to come around to my position, even though I lost every vote but the last one, but I won the last one and changed the course of the CMA policy here.
Fantastic.
That's great.
So, but anyway, I admire you so much for running. But the major thing is you have to get the people educated ahead of time. And, you know, if you could set up some institutes of the Constitution up in your area to teach people about property rights, to teach them about the Constitution, to teach them about our heritage of freedom. Big right. problem is we have is most people don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand freedom. They think that, of course, the government is the ultimate arbiter, whereas that was never the way that our system was set up.
I got to tell you something, Dr. Stan, that right on point, what you're talking about continuing to run. For the last 3 years, in this county, we have something called a home rule charter. It amounts to a county constitution. we as freeholders in this county meet every 5 years and review that. At the last review, we put on a ballot a measure to elect the head planner of Clallam County, which is the county we live in. Now, in order to accomplish that, we met and went to lots and lots of meetings, and we educated everyone we could. We were successful. We are the only county in the United States with an elected planner. And it cost us about $130,000 worth of golden umbrella to get rid of the appointed, politically correct planner we had in there before. And now we have a man going into office in January who understands private property rights, who understands the Constitution, and who is a Christian and a believer. And it's been a marvelous thing. Even though we lost the county commissioner race, we did in fact accomplish a great deal by getting that man elected.
Well, I think it's worth $135,000 to get rid of somebody, yeah, and get somebody in there who will represent the people rather than the,
right,
elite.
Money well spent, we say.
Well, the other thing that people got educated about, because of the biased newspapers that we have here, they made a point of reporting on several of the articles that I had written for the Citizen Review Online, one of which was about our United Nations Olympic Mountain here. We have two designations, I think you know, as a UN Biosphere and as a World Heritage Site. And I had written last year on, because it was the UN Year of the Mountain, about our Olympic Mountains here. And, of course, they had a field day with that one. Oh, you know, the UN's taking over the Olympic Peninsula, says Ford. So, but the advantage to that was they did mention the website a number of times, and we started getting a lot more hits from local people, which in turn is helping to educate folks on some of the things that are going on, like Agenda 21 and sustainable development and the move to create a wildlands project across swathe across the United States
with a trail.
Well, I think that's so important that you're up there and that you are educating people. As you know, this is happening all across the country, and there are groups in almost every state that are really having an impact and getting people educated. Great work that's going on up in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area. Of course, right here in Santa Cruz, we have our own Freedom 21 group dedicated to educating people about Agenda 21 and this effort to take over property rights. And little bit, why we are circumventing the controlled media, both radio and television and newspapers, and getting the truth out that there is a plan to take away our property rights. And you take away property rights, you take away our life and liberty, because life and liberty and property go together. That's what John Locke said back in the 1600s. That was the very foundation of our Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and it was property initially, and then they changed the words to pursuit of happiness, but life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But in the Constitution, when they wrote it, they understood John Locke's concepts, and whatever they mentioned, life and liberty, they always mentioned property. So it's so important that people understand, you know, and join together to get rid of these scoundrels on your council there that are dedicated to the idea that, you know, government can control property, because if government control property, government can control people. Well, has anybody set up an Institute of the Constitution up in your area to begin training people in the Constitution?
We have a gentleman over in Kennewick, Washington, east of quite a bit east of us, who has a I just mailed in a petition the other day. He's trying to get a ballot measure on the state ballot that requires the schools to teach the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence in the public schools as a amendment to the state constitution.
Well, of course,
in answer to your question, no, we don't have any.
You really need to think very seriously about that, because this would be a wonderful way to train people who can train other people who can train other people.
Yeah.
And you can use the same material over and over again. But the trouble with teaching the Constitution in the schools is there is legislation before the Senate now, and before the House to make this law that every school will have to teach the Constitution, and they're giving a grant to an organization to write the curriculum. Well, the group has already written the textbook, the one that's getting the grant, and the textbook simply has totally distorted the meaning of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. So it doesn't do any good to teach them unless you teach them right.
That's
and
right.
As they were originally intended. And unfortunately, this organization that the name escapes me right now, but certainly Alan Quist has written a great deal about this, and it's covered in a book we have called Fed Ed, or in the four tape set we have on Fed Ed. This organization, which is writing the civics curriculum when it gets the Declaration of Independence, it leaves out entirely the phrase of endowed by our Creator. In other words, it says,
yeah,
we hold these truths to be self-evident, dot, 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 that all we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, dot, 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 and endowed with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But they leave out any mention of the Creator doing that. So, and then, of course, with the Constitution, they slant it that the Constitution is to provide for us. They tell the Bill of Rights really isn't very good. What's really important is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, because that gives us so many more rights. And after all, we're guaranteed the right of freedom of speech and freedom of press and freedom of assembly, as long as it goes along with the policies of the United Nations.
Right.
Nothing about the freedoms we have coming from God, and that is what we have to teach in our schools. But how can you do it when the court has decreed we can't mention God in our schools? So you really can't teach the Constitution in our schools. And I know the gentleman you're talking about who was trying to get this on the state ballot, but has he thought of the implications? Because there's no way you can teach about American history if you can't teach about God.
Right. Have you heard of a book out called The Death of Right and Wrong, written by a Tammy Bruce? You know who she is?
I don't know who she is. I've heard the title.
She wrote another one talking about the thought police, and she is a lesbian. She is a former feminist and a former activist in the NOW organization. She is disgusted with all of that. She has written this book about the death of right and wrong, and in that book, which I'm currently reading, she makes a statement: without a God, everything goes. Then you have promiscuity, you have gay marriages, you have all this nonsense that violates our traditional Western culture tradition, which Western culture is being destroyed.
She's absolutely right.
And Madison, I think it was Madison that said the Constitution is wholly... It doesn't work unless there's a religious foundation.
Well, actually, the quotation, I believe, was, let's see if I can find it right here. The quotation, as I recall, came
inadequate.
From
Adams,
and he basically
inadequate.
Said that our form of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other. That was
right.
That's a general theme, but the American people don't understand that you cannot have freedom unless you have a moral foundation.
That's her point in this book, which I think the point of this whole area, as far as I'm concerned, Doctor, is this. Here is a woman, a feminist, who was active in the feminist movement, who is an open lesbian, who is a very good friend of Dr. Laura Schlesinger, who is coming out and well-respected in the academic community, a very articulate author, and simply saying, she says, I am not a Christian, but I believe in the Christian principles and I believe in Western civilization, and you are destroying Western civilization with your godless approach to society.
We'll have to see if we can track her down. That's The Death of Right and Wrong, is it?
Yes.
And the quotation is, we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions and bridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution is made only for moral and religious people. Mm-hmm. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other, which is exactly what we've been talking about.
Yes, precisely. I want to go back just to a second, Doctor. You were talking about, before we came on, I heard you mention the idea that they're taking by eminent domain the river properties that we have up here. Much of what the activity up here is grant money to buy out property owners
And they're not buying the real estate, Doctor. They're buying the development right of the surface of the property to hold in perpetuity for non-development under the guise of preserving farmland.
Now, is that the National Conservancy? Who's doing it?
Part of that, and a local group called Protect the Farms. Several green organizations are involved in that. And we have the tribal people, the Indian tribal people are backing that 100% as well.
It's a local trust, the North Olympic Land Trust, which, of course, is connected, if you follow it up the line, it is connected to the Nature Conservancy.
And, of course, the Nature Conservancy gets the money from the federal government to the
right.
idea that they will buy the property, and then, of course, they will make sure it's not developed. What they do is they will buy it, you know, for a market value, and then they will sell it to the members of their executive committee, and this is something that's come out recently at a very, very low price, so that they can have, in other words, they buy the land, and then they sell it at a very low price to the members of their own board with the idea that it won't be developed. And then, of course, some of the property that they bought, supposedly for natural reserves, is being used for oil drilling and gas drilling, and they're really violating all of the concepts. We'll be right back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will decide that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, and then our weekend programs, and we do one weekend program on the KSCO, which, maybe once a month or more. I think my next program is on the 3rd of January, where we reach out to a great audience here in the Monterey Bay area. And then, of course, we have our regular program that's heard on 35 stations across America, pre-recorded. But we try to use that to educate people about what's going on. So would you join the Radio Liberty family while you become part of our effort to reach out across America, as we do by shortwave, by internet, by satellite, and we do have people that utilize all of those various vehicles to get the information. And with a growing audience, why, it's really exciting to talk to people who just got started listening to our programs, have been listening for 6 months, for a year, but are beginning to learn and understand the information they're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh, or from Bill O'Reilly, or from Dan Rather, or from Tom Brokaw, beginning to get a grasp of this concept that behind everything that's going on, there is another master plan, and that there is a force which manipulates both of our political parties, and the ultimate goal of both political parties is a new world order and a new world religion. It ties into this whole concept of globalization, having American troops stationed throughout the world, if you read General Wesley Clark's new book, Winning Modern Wars, he will tell you that in November of the year 2001, he went to the Pentagon. Now, this is just 2 months after the September 11th attack. And one of the officials there said, oh, yeah, we have a 5-year plan. First, we'll take out Iraq. Then we'll take out Syria and Lebanon and Libya and Iran and the Sudan. It was all planned. This is long-term planning. But we needed an incident. We needed an incident. Well, anyway, if you read his book, he tells you about the high government official in the military who told him the 5-year plan was to go after all of these various countries. So if you think that we went to war because of what happened on 9/11, you don't understand. This was long-range planning. We needed 9/11 if we were going to get America to attack Afghanistan. And, of course, we went into Afghanistan, you remember, to capture the wicked Osama bin Laden, but we wouldn't let our troops try to catch him. And we want the documentation that we didn't try to catch him. We have articles where high officials said our policy is not Osama bin Laden first, it's Osama bin Laden last. We went there to get the oil fields, and then we went into Iraq for the same reason. Well, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we do hope that many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family, because we're gradually expanding. In fact, I wish we could expand up there into your area up there. We've talked to people there at the radio station. They didn't seem to be very enthused about carrying any programs similar to ours. Is there any other radio station? You just have the one there, Bob.
No, we just have the one, Doctor, but there's one across the Puget Sound that comes in. It's an AM station over in Oak Harbor, which is on Whidbey Island. We might investigate that. Our good friend, yours and mine, Robert Plasky, I will concur with him and see if we can't expand, because their signal comes over here quite clearly.
Now, this is what you really need to do. If you can get onto the radio and you can get into an area, even if only half an hour a week, you can gradually begin to build up a radio audience,
right,
as we have in areas all across California, really all across the country, although I prefer being on every day. Sometimes it's financially prohibitive, but fortunately, we do have many states that will carry us at markedly reduced rates, but we can usually organize one of those Saturday programs, and that certainly gives us an area, at least to target specific areas, to begin to get the people there thinking. And the most important thing that you could do, waiting for the next election to come up, would be to set up one of these institutes of the Constitution, and really in a weekend, why you can train people the things that they've never heard before, the difference between a republic and a democracy, why our founding fathers wrote the Bill of Rights, and what it's really about. It's about limiting the power of government. That was the secret of our way of life, was that government governs best, it governs the least. This is what John Locke had said, and of course our founding fathers believed that. And how far we've got from that to where we are today, where now you were telling us about the wetlands up there, and they're simply they're taking the river frontage and tying that up with the Natural Conservancy. How are they getting the people to sell?
They're describing them as willing sellers. The way they touted my brother-in-law, I have first-hand information on this, they came by and said, would you like an appraisal on your property? And almost everyone said, sure, a free appraisal, wonderful. So they had to sign an agreement for the appraisal. Well, in the agreement was very craftily worded, short, maybe four or five sentences, but there was some ambiguous terminology used, and they twisted that to mean that they were willing to sell their property. And the reality of it is, of course, that the appraisals on their chosen few came in quite high, and because my brother-in-law is a bit of an activist, his came in remarkably low, and they wanted to buy the property for what he paid for it 5 years ago, and of course he refused to sell. But they have a plan. They have recently we found out there's about 600 acres up and down the river that they'd like to take out in the next short term, 5 years. They have enough money to buy 350 of those acres. Money isn't their problem. They get all the money they want whenever they want it. Their problem is Americans willing to sell. And you have to remember, Dr. Stan, that the state of Washington is one of the most liberal states in the Union. And the people that live here consistently vote for liberal socialist candidates. And that has been one of our problems, that uphill battle, of course, trying to advance the cause of freedom and liberty and conservative thinking.
No, but you see, the reason that it's liberal is because your newspapers are liberal, your radio and your television are liberal, and your educational system is liberal, so the people never hear the truth.
That's amazing.
I used to be a dedicated socialist. It wasn't until I heard the truth, and then suddenly it was so obvious what the truth was. Same thing happened to Clarence Thomas, who was Supreme Court Justice. He was a dedicated Marxist until he spent some time with Thomas Sowell, and one weekend I've heard, so much of his attitude towards believing the government could solve our problem shifted not to the government can solve our problem, the government is our problem, and this was the beginning of his move towards conservatism.
Yes.
People will recognize it, but you've just got to be able to have them hear the
truth.
When
Sue ran for county commissioner, that was her She ran on a platform of jobs. We need desperately need jobs. We desperately need to cut timber. Thank God the Bush administration opened up the timber cutting here in the Northwest. But Sue ran on a platform of less government, less regulation, and more jobs. We have a Walmart coming into our little community here, along with a Home Depot. And let me tell you, Doctor, there was a cry went up like you can't believe from the liberals. Says, oh, my God, you're wrecking our little town. And, of course, conservative people say, if you own the property and it's zoned for that and you're not in violation, you ought to be free to do what you want to do. And they are, in fact, going to put a Walmart into this area. But that's a good example of the liberals. They're taking it to court right now. They're trying to put that Walmart development into court of law. They're simply going to use an environmental study to try to block or slow down that progress. We think they'll probably not be successful in that effort.
Well,
one of the advantages I did have during the election campaign was we decided the way to reach the people was to go knocking on their doors. And so I knocked on over 15,000 doors. Our county here has about 65,000 people. And I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people and get their input and share some ideas. And so that was positive. I'm very interested in this institution of the Constitution and how we could go about getting that something like that started here.
Well, it's really very simple. I'll just give you a telephone number. You call it the first of the week. It's 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. It's a turnkey operation. There's a book that tells you everything to do. There's videos of lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo on the Constitution. There are 12 half-hour lectures, and then there's a couple of lectures by David Barton, all on videos, and all you have to do is find to get the people together, and you can do it in a weekend. It takes 2 days to do it on a weekend, or you can do it, a lot of people just do it half an hour a week, and then you have a time to talk about it afterwards, and you ask, the questions are all listed, the answers to the questions. And, you know, somebody who didn't even understand the Constitution could put one of these on. Certainly somebody like yourself, as knowledgeable as you are, wouldn't have any difficulty. But what you do is you end up with 30 or 40 people who understand the Constitution, and at least some of those people will want to put these on in their own areas. And then this thing begins to grow. And let me tell you, this is going all over America. Every day, back in Annapolis, Maryland, where these actually come from, and Mike Perutka, who's going to be running for the presidency on the Constitution Party ticket, he's a lawyer, and he found out about 5 or 6 years ago it was going on, and instead of traveling all over and living it up, why, he's put the money he makes in his law practice into putting this Institute of the Constitution together, and has hired people to help him get it out. And every day, why, several of these go out across America. They put out over 200 of them this year, and we hope to get out 400 next year, and this keeps multiplying. Pretty soon, the American people are going to learn this most carefully kept secret, and that is that we were a Christian nation. This country was founded on Christian values. Our law was based upon the Bible, and the people in the Supreme Court have violated their oath to uphold our Constitution.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So it's a great, great program. If you need, of course, you can always call me off the air, and I can tell you more about it. But these have been successful. They're putting on over in Spokane. I don't know how many in the Spokane area they put on, but I know they put a fair number of them on over there. And they're really beginning to reach the people. You know, I think they had Dr. Eidsmo up there. A couple of hundred people came to hear him speak. About 3 months or so ago. So, but you need a rallying point. You need to educate people and then get them educating others and make them realize that freedom is not free. There are always out there people out there who want to take away freedom, and if they're not careful, it'll be their property that'll be condemned or taken away in one means or another. And once freedom is lost, it will never be regained.
Well, a lot of our freedoms are being removed systematically. There's a lot of flack about the Patriot Act, and our county commissioners even, as of the other day, made a resolution, and really what it is craftily worded in opposition to the Patriot Act, really. And if you've been in an airport lately, we all know the impact of the terrorism, the fear of the terrorism. And, of course, the best protection from any of that is one has to be aware of. There is no way to protect the entire country from every aspect of that sort of thing. But it's the erosion of individual rights one more time under the idea that for the better good, for the greater good, and which trashes the individual right concept.
Well, they're doing a good job of it. Of course, you find that a very liberal a group of people, our city council, board of supervisors here, many of them are Frank Marxists, and they're coming out against the Patriot Act. And I agree with them. I mean, they're right. Maybe they don't understand it, but at least they see the erosion of freedom. What really concerns me most are the good Americans, a lot of them church-growing people who believe what they read in the newspaper, that there's just nothing to worry about, and that we've just got to give our freedom if we're going to, of course, ever catch that wicked Osama bin Laden. And yet, of course, this is not aimed at Islamic terrorism. It's aimed at taking away our freedom. And
yeah.
If you read the bill, you see, nobody's ever really read the bill. Almost half of the bill deals with finances. People don't really even know what's in the bill. And we've had some great talks by Joan Paris. In fact, that was at our latest conference. We had Joan's here speaking, and hopefully we'll have the videos available before long. And in that, she pointed out that half the bill has to do with finances. Nobody's told the American people what's in the legislation. All they know is a few of the spectacular things, which the government says, oh, well, we have never, never, never asked any librarian to track the reading habits of anybody. But if you look at the legislation, if a librarian is contacted and mentions that publicly, she can go to jail. So the American Library Association polled a number of librarians and asked them if they had been polled. And 16 of them wrote back and said, we cannot tell you if we've been polled because we would be put in prison if we told you that we had been. Yeah. So what can you say? They've set up a system where they can make any statement they want to, knowing full well that any librarian who came forward and said, well, I got such a request, they could put in prison forever. We got a real problem in America. We got a problem because so many Americans really don't know what's going on.
Well, the Patriot Act is so voluminous that it's very difficult for anybody to even get a hold of the thing and read through the Patriot Act, let alone a municipality. Much of the interpretation of that is all verbal, handed down from U.S. Customs or whoever. One of our county commissioners was elected because he was the guy that caught the very first terrorist. Rasham was his name, here in Port Angeles, Washington, that came across with a load of dynamite in his car. The man that ran him down and tackled him was subsequently elected as a Republican county commissioner here in our county. So that went a long ways in the state of Washington, of course. We're a border community from Canada.
Well, now, is he a pretty good commissioner?
Well, he's not a bad commissioner, Doctor. What disappointed me was that he wouldn't support the Republican candidate for the election, which was Sue Ford. He said, well, I don't support political candidates. I don't make supporting comments. And that was very disconcerting to me. And right on the heels of that, of course, the man that's running for governor now, the man by the name of Dino Rossi here in the state of Washington just announced, a Republican candidate who is a current state senator, he immediately endorsed him and handed him a check. So the man is a moderate, not a conservative. The commissioner I'm talking to you about is self-described as a moderate. And my personal feeling on moderates is you're neither hot nor cold, therefore you're lukewarm. And I know what the carpenter said about lukewarm. He said, I'll spew you out of my mouth because you're neither hot nor cold. So that's the kind of take I have on moderate politicians. Stand up for something or you'll fall for anything. That kind of thing. But anyway, the guy ended up, he's a hero. He was a local hero, and that's how he got elected, and he's coming up now in his second term.
Well, I think that the important thing is that, Sue, run again. In the meantime,
yes.
You get those people there educated. When will the next election be?
4 years from now.
Four years from now?
Well, our districts, Doctor, we have three districts, and they rotate every other year. For a four-year term.
All right, well, then you've got time to find other candidates to run, but the important thing is to get the education in, get the people to understand what it is, so that if you have people properly educated, they'll vote right. And it's
right.
When they don't understand what the issues are that they'll go down and they'll vote for somebody because they know their name. Maybe they're a local hero. Maybe they've ran down a terrorist. But that doesn't qualify
right.
you to be in a position of responsibility in government.
Right. The other thing I want to pursue here in this next 4 years is I've long since wanted to develop some sort of radio communication in our small area. Even our local station is limited by treaty how much wattage they can. They only operate on about 5 watts, an AM station, about 5 watts, and they're 17 miles away from us, and we can just barely get them. Because of the Canadian border, the Canadians are afraid we'll put some unacceptable radio waves into their backyard. So you can't say anything on Canadian radio. You can't say anything about the church or Christianity or anti-abortion or anything like that.
Well, if you could get a station there with a directional signal, have you thought about applying to the FCC to get a license?
Well, we did. We pursued that, and there are they're not accepting applications. There are no license available. What the only hope we would have is to be buying an existing license, and that's a possibility if we can raise the money.
Well, it would certainly be worth it because radio is a wonderful way to reach people.
Wonderful way.
And then, of
yeah.
course, the other thing is through your website, if you can get people going to your website or you can send them emails on a regular basis every a week or send them faxes, things of that sort, so that they know what's going on and they feel like they're sort of on the inside of this movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sue has a wonderful website set up, and we get a lot of compliments on it. And if I could, Doctor, I'd like to give you her website address.
You go right ahead.
It is citizenreviewonline.org. Citizenreviewonline.org. And on that website, you'll find a tremendous amount of information pertaining not only to what we're doing up here in the Northwest locally, but what's going out all across America. Similar things are happening, and we get feedback from folks in different areas that concur that what's going on here is going on there.
Are you networking with other people there? Or network at all with the people over in Spokane, a very, very conservative group over there?
Yes. I've got all kinds of folks that send me articles of interest to our site, which, you know, our primary focus is on property rights and the loss of those. Just following what's happening around primarily the West. But I've got some folks in Santa Cruz that send me articles. I've got people all over Washington that are sending me articles. So we've got a great network. And there's another website I'd like to mention. Yours is excellent also. And I'm sure that you'll give out your website address. But another good one is propertyrights.org. And that's very, very comprehensive.
And whose is that?
I cannot remember her name. I've been trying to think of it.
That's not Carol LaGrasse, is it?
No, it's
where,
not.
Whereabouts is she?
She's in the Midwest somewhere. Ohio, I think.
All right. It doesn't ring a bell with me. I've heard of the website, though. Certainly, Echologic is...
Henry Lamb
is
excellent,
and discerningtoday.org. Michael Kaufman has a very good one. So there are lots of lots of websites out there, and do you have links to those, or
yes,
at least
I
to
do.
Some of them?
Yes, I have a whole bunch of links.
All right, fine. And for, once again, the website for Sue Ford is citizenreviewonline.org, right?
Right.
That's correct.
And so go there, and if you're concerned about property rights, which you have to be, property rights are under attack today, because if they can take away property rights, they can take away freedom.
Right.
Julie Smithson is the name of the gal.
Julie Smithson, huh?
Yes.
Well, this is happening all over. Whatever happened to the people down there in Klamath River? Did they ever get their water turned back on so they could get back to the farming?
Yes, eventually they did.
They're still fighting the battle there, though, with the tribes.
It's limited, though. It's limited, Doctor. They had a bit of success, but it's still limited, and they're still fighting Fish and Wildlife and National Park Service and every other federal entity with a Smokey the Bear hat on, you know. It's our park. You know, they raise the national parks. If you go in a national park, it costs you $10 now to get in a park. And, I mean, you just talk about your liberties being... used to be a joy to take your family to National Park and enjoy an afternoon. Now, gosh, and they're charging you to get in there.
Well, that's because the property, the parks belong to the people, and that's why
we
have to charge the people for the parks.
Right.
Well, you know, my comment to one of the bureaucrats was, well, if it's mine, I ought to be able to sell it. You know, if you own property, then that would give you the unmitigated right to sell that property, and that right doesn't exist, so therefore we don't own it.
No, unfortunately, all these are Marxist ideas, and this whole idea of the national park system all across America was a Marxist idea sold on the idea, wouldn't it be wonderful to preserve the heritage for future generations? But if you go back and read what Karl Marx said, they wanted, of course, this idea of government owning private property. They would do away with private property rights. And they would also have government control of education, of industry, of agriculture. And all of these things are coming to pass. There was to be government income tax. There was going to be inheritance tax. And every basic tenet laid out in the Communist Manifesto in 1848 has come to pass in America, and the average individual is totally unaware of it. Well, what message do you want to leave with our listeners tonight about your struggle and what people might be able to do to help?
Well, my own personal thing is get active. You know, I think it was Sir Edmund Burke that said the only thing necessary for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And in my business, I hear people say, well, I don't want to get involved in politics. I don't want to stir the pot. You like doing that, Bob, but I don't want to get involved. And the reality of it is you can get involved with other than your pocketbook. We need good men to run for political office. So my message would be, if you want to keep this country, then you've got to do something to preserve it. So.
I would say, as I have said to many people that I've shared with, we are in a war right now within our own United States, and it's primarily a spiritual battle based in the spiritual realm. But we need to... get educated, and your listeners, of course, are taking the proper step toward that and listening to your program, and educate themselves. There's plenty of ways to educate yourself on the internet, and then do take action. Get involved. Get an organization started. If you don't have some property rights groups or other organizations that are pro-Constitution in your area, start one, and people will rally to you. We found that true here. We've called several meetings and formed a couple of organizations toward property rights where people have been injured by what's been taking place with government takeover of their property or the inability to use their property because of excessive regulations. And the next step is to start showing up at, and putting the pressure on the elected officials.
Go to the meeting.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both for everything you're doing. Please keep in touch with us, and I hope you'll seriously consider setting up an institute of the Constitution and begin getting those people up there educated about what's really going on. And if you can get any line on a radio station up there, let us know.
I will, Doctor, and I want to just say a big thank you to Robert Plasky for all he has done to help. He was tireless in his effort. Went with Sue doorbelling day after day after day. Wonderful man, and God bless you, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate everything he's done. He keeps us appraised of what you're doing up there. Anyway,
wonderful
God,
man.
God bless you both. Thanks so very
Hi,
much
doctor,
for being
thank
with
Thank you.
Good night. And this is Dr. Stan. Yeah. And this is the point where we just ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival because, as Sue Ford said, this is a spiritual battle. And lastly, we ask you to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow night, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.